Okay, how about an hour of your phone calls with Scott Marlowe as we talk about cryptids? I'm going to get into Bigfoot when I get back, though, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Scott Marlowe with us, and of course, we'll take your phone call. Scott, Bigfoot, of course, a creature all over the place. Maybe it's the skunk ape. Maybe it's not. In your opinion, what do you think Sasquatch might be?
Well, Sasquatch, which is a variety of Bigfoot, I'm not sure that Grover Krantz wasn't right, that it's not some manifestation of a Gigantopithecus blackie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible it could be something else, too.
Could it be like a Neanderthal?
That's possible. That's what they think the Yeti might be.
So a little step up, a little more intelligent than an ape, but not quite what a modern human might be?
Well, yeah. And then the reason I'm hesitating is, you know, we're technical. We like machines and electronics and things like that.
Yep.
We're talking about an animal that is so intelligent that, but it is intelligent in its own environment in a way that we are not.
And it does not want to get captured, does it?
No, and it apparently doesn't want us to know that it's there for whatever reason.
Some people have thought that these creatures, Scott, could be dimensional. I tend to think they're physical. They've been on this planet. They're not extraterrestrial. They're just creatures. What do you think?
I agree with you.
Why?
I just don't believe that people understand how difficult it would be to, well, let's put it this way, to be interdimensional in the way people expect it to be and talk about it and what have you. We're talking J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about wizardry and stuff that just doesn't exist. To open a dimensional portal, from what I know of good physical science, would create so much electromagnetic interference that radio stations and television stations and telecommunications in general, would be so disrupted, if not the electronic grid that we all depend on, by trying to open that kind of a portal would be beyond belief. I mean, you're talking something on the order of, an EM pulse. And it's going to knock out everything electronic for miles and miles.
Oh, sure. Willis. What is it about?
I just don't buy it.
What is it about Florida, Scott, that, features so many different kinds of cryptids?
Well, we've got a lot of remote areas down here. I mean, granted, some of the swamps where the billy ape, for example, which is, an African version of Bigfoot, has been discovered or as large as the entire state of Florida. But we've got so many places here where animals can just vanish. How can we have hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of these boa constrictors and not have one show up on somebody's doorstep every day?
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll start with going to Steve, who's truck driving in Kittery, Maine. Welcome to the program, Steve. Go ahead.
Morning, George. Morning, Scott.
Hi there.
Good morning.
I got three things. One, you were talking about Sturgis and wondering, the sizes and stuff like that. We got them up here in the Kennebunk River, and mm-hmm. I've seen them as big as 5 or 6 feet jumping out of the water and splashing down.
Well, every now and then a dead carcass will, wash up on shore. We've had that happen here in Tampa, as well as South Carolina, and the carcasses have been enormous. Yes, I agree with you.
And number two, somewhere, my mom lives down in Chiefland, Florida, and somewhere right around there, I believe it's Standing Springs, there's a wild reserve. And we were out there just messing around, just walking, checking out the area and stuff, and we've seen hogs that you're talking about is probably from snout to tail, probably about 5 foot in length. Stuff like that. So, I mean, I've seen them not quite as big as what you're saying, but, I mean, big. And the third thing, my brother and I were fishing down there in the Suwannee River, and he caught a fish that had teeth that looked like human. I've never seen anything like that. He says, oh, yeah, I've caught these before and stuff, so I've never looked into it or anything like that. I'm just wondering if that's something that's common down there, because we don't have that up here in Maine. And I'll take my answers off the air, and I appreciate your time.
All right, Steve. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. There have been reports of that down here, and I'm not sure exactly what kind of fish it is myself. That's not my area specialty, but I have heard those stories, and it's interesting that he brings up Chiefland and the Fanning Springs area, because I've gotten reports from some of the wildlife officials there of what we're calling the Levy Lion, which has apparently been an escaped exotic, and there's a lion, actual lion, African lion, roaming around down there that people are reporting. That's a real hotbed, that area of various cryptids. The Black Florida Panther is supposedly shown up there. I just mentioned the lion. I get reports of swamp apes in that area frequently. And of course, you know, now you're bringing up the unusual fish with human teeth. There's any number of interesting things there. And coincidentally, that's also one of the great fossil grounds in Florida along the Suwannee River. So could there be a reason for that goes back many, many, many thousands of years? Possibly. I just don't know. Even the toxodont, which I mentioned in my book, Cryptid Creatures, there were reports of the animal there in that vicinity back when Ivan Sanderson was down here looking for the mythical three-toed monster that was misreported as a gigantic penguin.
And he never found that, did he?
No, of course, he never expected to. If you really read his material carefully, yeah. He said the footprints resembled that. That was not necessarily the creature, but the media grabbed it and made a joke out of it, and then the joke has persisted.
Scott, how'd you get your interest in cryptids?
By having a sighting of my own in 1975. The first thing I ever saw was a swamp ape. And at the time I was a pre-med student at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. And this is the first time I was living off campus, and came home one night, and there was one in the parking lot where I was, that was in the back of this new apartment complex that had been developed.
Let's go now to Ray in Miami, Florida. Ray, thank you for calling. You're on the air with us. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. Good morning. Good morning,
Scott.
Morning. Good morning. Yes. George, I am from Jamaica, and you might have heard of Goat Island.
I have.
Okay, right across from Goat Island, Galleon Bay, there's a creek. That section is called Black Bar. And in that creek, there's a Rastaman who used to hunt crocodiles, crocs and alligators. Mm-hmm. And one day, he set traps right along those creeks. And he, from the mouth of the creek down to the bottom, he left to go check some of his traps. And on his way back, he saw a bunch of mud. See, the water was dirty coming down there. So they went up to the top of it. There was an alligator got caught in, he set this trap with chain tied to a tree and hook with a hook with meat on it.
Oh boy.
And that thing burst the chain. And he said he was glad it happened, because there's no way he could have put that in the boat. But let me give you this one. Okay, there's a creek that runs inland now.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy raised a lot of goats. And he used to miss his goats all the time.
Oh.
So one day he set some trap with meat like that, and it was gone. He was walking on the bridge over the creek, and there was this alligator sleeping right at the edge of the water. And he shot him with a shotgun. And when they pull him out of the water, and they measure from the tip of his nose to his tail, 15 feet long, I was surprised. That is why I called. When I heard the gentleman mention the length of the alligator.
15 feet, yeah.
Yes, 15 feet long, but you can't hunt them anymore down there.
Did they cut that alligator open, Ray, and out popped a goat?
No, they didn't. It was left there and rot.
Wow,
it was
that's
so
a great
big.
Story. Oh, they're huge. I mean, Scotty, how big can an alligator get? Do you think 15 feet is as big as they get?
No, I think they can get probably up to 5 feet larger. And
wow.
It also depends on the species. I've heard Nile crocs get up to 20 feet.
I've never touched a crocodile skin, but is it like rock hard? Is it leathery? What's it feel like?
It's kind of leathery. I mean, I've had, you know, crocodile shoes before, crocodile skin shoes before, and I used to love them because I couldn't wear them out. So it's an interesting hide, an interesting skin.
And it's spiky,
and it's
very, too.
Very durable.
Why did Mother Nature give the hide that little spiky appearance?
It needed it.
From who? Who would be its predator?
Well, the alligator scutes, which is what you're talking about, probably serve some sort of a purpose. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I think it has to do with the construction of the derma, the skin itself, so that it is that leathery and is that tough, so that it can survive, you know, the types of animals that it encounters. I mean, have you seen the video that's, you know, gone viral of the from South America of the jaguar attacking a gator?
Yes, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good reason why you would need that kind of tough hide.
Yeah. Let's go to Barbara in San Diego, first-time caller. Hi, Barbara, go ahead.
Hi, George. A long-time listener.
Thank you.
First-time caller. Love your show. I heard a story about a dolphin that, I think it was near Florida, that jumped into a boat and landed on a lady and broke both of her legs. Did you hear about that?
No, I haven't heard that.
Not about that one. We were talking about a sturgeon that killed a little girl. But
this was sometime in the last week. I heard it somewhere on the news, on the radio news.
Yeah.
I just wondered what you thought about that.
Well, these animals are tough, Scott, aren't they?
Yeah. I down in Terra Verde, I mean, I've taken my kids out in boats, and, you know, the dolphins swim with us all the time, and they'll race the boat, and you'd see them, you know, jumping and diving, you know, off the bow of the boat, and they have a wonderful time. So I'm sure one, if it wanted to, could jump up that high. I mean, they're very strong, and could easily land in a boat if a mistake were made. So it doesn't exactly surprise me. But, you know, as strong as they are, there's no question that they could do some significant damage if they came in contact with you in the process.
Scott, what do you think of course, some people who would love to go out and shoot a Bigfoot?
You don't want to go there with me, George.
No. Your views are like mine.
Yeah. I don't like killing any animal, much less one that is as rare and unique and I think ecologically important as Bigfoot, assuming that they're there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to happen one day, I think, I'm afraid.
Unfortunately, I'm sure you're right.
Let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. Greg's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Greg, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, world.
Hey, Greg.
It was in May. It was a Sunday evening. I worked the third shift out here at a lumber mill. And just outside of Jacksonville, a place called White House. Well, I got a bunch of little stray kitty cats I take care of back there. And one night I was going back to check on them. And as I round the corner, this giant bird launches itself off a pack of 8-footers. It's 8-foot lumber. It's probably sitting about 15 feet in the air. And when he spread his wings and was gaining altitude, you know, going down the lumber mill, it's about 40 feet across from one shed to the other shed. And as he was spreading his wings and flapping and coming up out of there, those wings almost stretched from one end to the other. I would say those wings are probably 35 feet long.
Yeah.
The bird was black. It had a white belly. And on his tail feathers, I could see as he's flying away from me, it was about, say, 10 to 12 just giant feathers made up those tail feathers.
Mm-hmm.
It was just phenomenal. And as for your Bigfoot, George, science does need a body.
See, it does need a body, but not that way. I don't know. What do you think of some kind of a sleeping gun where you just shoot it and the thing falls asleep and then they study it and maybe let it go again, Scott?
Well, that would be my preferred way to do it, and assuming that they could find one and tranquilize it, that's great, and certainly the better way to go. But I think if we just got the DNA from the animal in any number of different ways, that it would be sufficient to prove that the animal exists.
Yeah, or some great pictures or something like that.
Well, pictures will never prove anything, with unfortunately, with what you can do with CGI and Photoshop these days. The DNA, if it's done right, is unequivocal.
What do you think of the old Patterson-Gimlin film?
I don't know what to think of it. I've seen
and weird
stories that that the thing was faked and it could potentially have been, but on the other hand, how many fakes have stood the test of time for 45 years?
Exactly, and they didn't have Photoshop in those days.
No, they didn't. And, given the camera equipment that was used, I tend to think whatever it was it was either an extremely good costume that even the best of Hollywood at the time could not reproduce, or that it was the real thing.
Up next, Stephen's in Louisville, Kentucky. Stephen, go for it.
Hello?
Hi, Stephen.
Yep. Hi, how you doing, sir?
Good.
I had a question. It's actually really funny that you bring up the large birds, because I was actually hunting a few weeks back out in California, actually doing some hog hunting, and I'd seen a very large bird-like creature actually swoop down and pick up a piglet.
Wow.
Now, the wildest part of the story isn't even the size was crazy. Now, from where the distance I was at and the angle I saw the creature, I couldn't give you. The last fella had a really good description, 35 feet long wingspan. I couldn't exactly give you a definitive wingspan. It had to be at least 15 to 20 feet. Now, the craziest
like a Cessna.
Part to me, I'm sorry, excuse me?
No, it's like a Cessna, that with that kind of wingspan.
Oh, you were like a small plane. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Now the craziest part was that it actually, it didn't have many feathers. It looked almost reptilian. And I actually wanted to ask you about a hypothesis I've been thinking. Is it possible for, what are the chances of either a surviving dinosaur or maybe just a new type of evolution that we haven't even seen yet?
Well, we've been talking about pterodactyls, which, we do get reports on, Scott, don't we?
Yep, we sure do.
I mean, as far-fetched as it might seem, would you say it's conceivable, it's possible, that a prehistoric pterodactyl is still around?
It's possible, certainly. In you're probably aware of the Ropon of New Guinea,
yes,
which is reportedly that kind of a thing.
They're all over the place there.
And the Kangamatu in Africa is also another pterodactyl-type creature.
That to me would be amazing if we could find that kind of discovery. Scott, we're going to come back in a moment here and take some final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed it is. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about witches, followed by, of course, those Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. By the way, 741 people to go, and we hit 15,000 members at paranormaldate.com. Continues to grow. Make sure you click your right country at the top of the homepage tab there. 741 of you, if you haven't been there to sign up for free, go ahead at paranormaldate.com. And welcome back. Our final segment with Scott Marlowe. Scott's website, by the way, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about his book, The New Edition of Cryptid Creatures of Florida. Scott, do you remember after World War II, the Japanese movies all came out, and they all had to do with monsters that were affected because of radiation and nuclear fallout? Do you think any of these creatures that we've talked about tonight may be anomalies based on some kind of catastrophe or radiation or anything like that?
Well, certainly radiation causes mutation, and in order to get some of the types of creatures that have been described, it's possible, not necessarily practical, but possible that it could be that way. You know, other, you know, there are things besides radiation that can cause mutation. Chemicals certainly can do that, and the kinds of pollution that we're pumping into rivers and streams and elsewhere in the world could also be, and just as equally be, responsible for some of these anomalous creatures. So, you know, it's anybody's guess until we actually find them and work with them. It's hard to say.
What's a megalodon? What's it, how's it pronounced?
Megalodon.
Yeah, what is that?
A
squid?
Shark.
It's a
that's
shark.
A gigantic, yeah, prehistoric shark. Mistakenly said to be related to the great white. It's not. It would actually have been related to the tiger shark.
How big is this shark?
About 60 feet, about the size of a Greyhound bus.
Oh, my God. It's like a whale.
Yeah.
There have been stories, I don't know how true, that this shark has had teeth that might have been washed ashore. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have. And theoretically, the teeth can be as large as a 9-inch serving plate.
My God. Now, have we seen the teeth? Do we know if it's authentic?
Well, I haven't seen any of the teeth that are not fossilized, but I have a pretty good collection of megalodon teeth that are fossilized myself that we've dug up here in Florida.
And they're that big?
Oh, some of them are, yeah, absolutely.
Jeez.
And the teeth are well known, I mean, all over the Southeast. You know, they're found in rivers up in North Carolina and South Carolina, parts of Georgia. You know, we've seen them over in Alabama and what have you, but you know, anywhere there was water and these things go back to the dinosaurs, go back to that period of time, you know, these sharks roamed around. Apparently, at least it is theorized that, they used to feed on giant squid. And now that we know that giant squid still exist, it's possible in the deep ocean that there may still be some megalodon.
Didn't giant squid in some of the older days attack wooden ships in the ocean?
They were reported to. I don't know if they did or didn't, but that certainly is part of the Mariner legends.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. We'll wrap things up here with Scott Marlowe, and let's pick it up with Daniel in Santa Maria, California. Daniel, you're up with us. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
So, you know, I'm most fascinated probably by humanoid, you know, anthropomorphic cryptids. And so, you know, I wonder, could they be like on a similar evolutionary track as humans? You know, is it just a matter of time before they develop spoken languages and, you know, that social structures? Like, is it possible they even now live in large communities?
Well, there are people out there who believe that they do communicate. And that they do have a spoken language. I think it's called shadow language. I myself have never heard them even remotely offer anything that would be articulate. And I have seen a swamp ape now 3 times myself. I'm sure to be as intelligent as they are, they have to have some kind of communication. But I know, because I've raised animals my whole life, and animals do communicate. We may not understand them as well as we think, and of course we joke about it with, you know, the horse whisperer and the dog whisperer and all of that, but these animals do communicate. All animals communicate in one form or another. They're not stupid. I hate it when I hear somebody say, "You dumb animal," because they're not.
Smarter than most people.
Well, in some cases, more human than some people I've met.
That's true, too.
But in any event, I'm not exactly sure how to answer your question. We don't, until we actually have a specimen to work with, there's no way to know for sure what they can and can't do. But, George, you talked about the extraterrestrial connection. Assuming that Bigfoot exists and that it is some kind of relic hominid or some sort of closely related creature, which I suspect is likely the case, with deference to your buddy Eric von Däniken, who's to say that these things weren't the source material for genetic experiments that resulted in us?
That's true. That's always true. I've always thought that they might have been the missing link, the cross between modern humans and apes. Skunk apes, how would you compare them to gorillas in terms of appearance and or, let's say, brain power?
Well, their head is definitely different. They more closely resemble an early human in their cranial development and the way they look. But the head sits up on a neck that is very, very clearly defined, like ours. Whereas with a gorilla, and the typical patty that you mentioned, the Patterson-Gimlin film, where the neck seems to sit lower, and they almost have to turn their whole torso to be able to turn their head.
It's like they don't even have a neck.
Yeah. But I tend to think that while the classic Sasquatch and the swamp ape are not the same species, they could be the same genus. So the Gigantopithecus or its relatives could have been the progenitor of these animals.
Do they walk more upright than an ape?
Yes, and they're extremely muscular.
Like an ape is. An ape is that way too.
Yeah.
Do they hang around trees, or are they on the ground most of the time?
Based upon the length of their arms, which tends to be longer than ours, I suspect that at least part of their life is arboreal.
All right. Next up, we've got Amy in Ohio. Welcome to the show, Amy. Hello there.
Hi, George.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. I was just wondering if you could possibly tell me if maybe what I saw when I was camping in Florida could possibly be the swamp ape.
What did it look like? And Scott, go ahead. Maybe you can help her.
I'm listening.
Okay. Well, we were camping in an area outside of Fort Myers, Florida. It's a place where it sometimes is swampy there, but it had dried up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a swimming hole back there. So me and about four other people were camping back there. I had gone off into the woods to get some firewood, and I saw this creature. It definitely was not a bear. I seem to have startled it. All I could think of was that it looked exactly like what you would say Bigfoot would look like. It was
almost
about
human face, Amy?
Yes. About 7 or 8 feet tall.
Wow.
It had long, like reddish hair. It walked away, and it walked like a person, like the arms were swinging like a person. So that's how I knew, like, it wasn't a bear or anything else.
Did it look more human than animal?
Yes, that's what it seemed. That's what it seemed to me. It was walking away from
you. In the area of Corkscrew Swamp.
I'm not sure exactly what swamp it was.
Okay.
But then my other friend, he also had seen the same thing. I didn't say anything to him, but later on around the campfire, he said, "I saw something kind of weird out there in the woods today." And I was like, oh.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, what you're describing is consistent with a number of reports that I've gotten from that area, particularly around Corkscrew Swamp.
And very similar, aren't they?
Yeah. So it is probably a swamp ape that you saw from what you're describing.
7 to 8 feet, are they that tall, Scott?
Yeah, they can get that tall.
Wow. And do they appear human-like, Scott?
In many respects, yes. And in fact, the tracks that they leave behind, which are, then I've got one of them that was given to me by the State Museum from an incident in Ocala National Forest. And they have five parallel toes. Now, George, I know you're well aware that the only great ape that has five parallel toes are humans.
That's right.
So this animal must be somewhat closely related to us or have followed a similar evolutionary path.
How exciting would that be to find something like that after all these years? Do they show any violence toward people?
Only apparently. I mean, I've heard all kinds of stories, but the only credible stories that I have ever heard where there was any violence was when we attacked them first.
So they defend themselves?
Yes, or their families.
All right. International Line, John is in Ontario. Hey, John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you, George?
Good, John. All is well. How about you?
Great to get on. And it's Scott, is it?
Yes.
It's Scott, yeah.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say your telephone greeter, George, he's a very congenial guy.
He's a good guy. It's David filling in for Tom tonight. Yep, he is.
What I wanted to say is the Thunderbirds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had witnesses with... I've seen stuff you wouldn't believe. It's unreal. I could phone in on every subject just about you could talk about. But the Thunderbirds, we were up north, Ontario. They call this north, but we were way up past where I am. And we were canoeing, a friend and I, and it was just quiet, quiet, quiet. No birds, nothing. And then I tapped my friend on the shoulder, and I said, don't say anything, but look up above you. And this was only about 40 feet above us because we could see every detail on these things. And they were Thunderbirds. And they had beaks on them that were at least 3 feet long. And the wingspan, like you say, they'd easily be like a small plane. And they all flapped their wings at the same time, and you would just hear this... You know, like a swish noise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, I didn't want to make any noise in case they saw us. And they came down at us. So my friend
come back and pick you up.
Yeah. And one other time, I started seeing so many things that I bought a very expensive video camera. And this one particular night, I don't bring it, of course.
Oh, no.
But I was coming home from a friend's place. It was 11:30 at night. I wasn't drinking anything. We were just drinking coffee. And I thought it was a child. And I thought, what's going on? It's 11:30 at night. And he's a good bit ahead of me on to the right on the country road. So I drove up. And no, this is a little furry guy walking perfectly straight up. He was covered from fur from his head to his toes. Had small ears. The reason I could see him so well, there's one part of this, George, you'll like. I drove right up to it. I had my high beams on and these spotlight things I had, and I could see it perfectly. And I kept bumping it with the truck. Not hard to hurt it, but I wanted to turn around so I could see its face.
It wouldn't run away, huh?
No, wasn't scared at all, but it was like, I hit it four or five times, enough to make it turn around, but finally it did. And if you ever saw a mouth of teeth like this thing had, it didn't just have one row of teeth. It had two, and another one sticking out. And the cat-like eyes, and so... It started to walk off the road. Now, there was no ditches, no shrubbery, nothing. There was a farm near, the big red farmhouse or whatever.
Yeah.
But it walked out, started walking off the road, and just like you, not like you, like the portals you see sort of like on that show Atlantis, but you couldn't see any ripples, nothing. This thing just walked right through, right into nothing. And I jumped out, opened the door, and I thought, do I go in and see what's in there or what? And I thought, no, I better not, because if this is a baby, you know.
The big ones might be there.
Yeah, and even this one, I was driving an all-wheel drive GMC van. And so its head came just above shoulder came just at the top of my.
Yeah, well, that's so. Scott, what do you think he was looking at?
Not sure. I mean, the double dentition is interesting because one of the things I've been researching, you're familiar with the Lovelock Cave Giants, aren't you?
Yes, we sure are.
And the double dentition is something that's been reported in association with these giant creatures. And you know, I've been wanting to get a hold of one of the molars so I can get some DNA done on them, which nobody seems to have done, to find out how closely related they are to us. And every time I get close to being able to do so, a government agency steps in and yanks them away from me.
Well, that's typical. So where do we get your book, Cryptid Creatures of Florida?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or a bookstore near you.
Scott, always enjoy you being on the program. It has been way too long. I mean, almost 6 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. My God, and I appreciate the invitation. I'd love to get on with you, and it's always a pleasure being with you.
Keep in touch with us. Whenever you do any more work or research, just give Lisa a call, and let's get you back on, okay?
I'll be happy to do that. Thanks so much for having me.
Super, Scott. You're a great guest. Cryptid Creatures of Florida. Wow, there's so many creatures out there. For Dan Galante, Dave Hines, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.